Welcome to the Told Me to Learn and Develop for Medical Educators podcast series from the Frank H. Netter MD School of Medicine. This podcast is for busy medical school faculty who want to expand their knowledge in teaching. I'm your host, Dr. Lisa Coplett, and I will bring you interviews with experts in medical education, fellow faculty, and medical students to discuss the issues most relevant to today's medical educators. Today, we're talking about professionalism, what it means in medicine, expectations for medical students, how it's assessed, and what we can do to help students develop their professional identities. Joining me today is Dr. Steve Paik, the Associate Dean for Admissions and Student Affairs at QU Netter. Steve is a pediatrician and joined QU Netter in November 2021 after serving for 9 years as the Pediatrics Program Director for the Department of Pediatrics at Columbia University. We're so happy you've joined us at QU Netter, Steve. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
The concept of professionalism in medicine is big. If we try to narrow the scope of the conversation to professionalism for medical students, how would you define the word?
So the word professionalism is big and wide, as you said. There's a lot of components to it. I think originally people saw it as an attitude or value, but now we're moving towards a set of behaviors that exhibit those attitudes and values. The best way I would think about professionalism in medicine is really the core of it is thinking about the patient. And all of the behaviors, how you study, how you relate to each other, it's coming back down to thinking about how do you become a physician for patients. So that individuality is balanced with also serving others. That's the concept that we try to bring our students at Netter, is that everything we do, every habit we create, has to be within the realm of thinking of how do we develop habits of practice that help our patients in the future.
That's an excellent platform that I think of as sort of a foundation to think about professionalism. I haven't thought about it quite that way.
I mean, I think a quick thing just to think about is really how do we bring meaning into the word professionalism, how do we bring meaning into why they're studying so hard, why they're sacrificing? And I think that as we talk about all the different other elements of wellness and, really the hot topics, we need to go back to how do we help our students stay engaged? How do we help them to not burn out? How do we help them to have values that are based in why they got into medicine in the first place. And oftentimes, that's easily forgotten, especially in the first 2 years of medical school.
Do you think that we talk about professionalism in medical education now more than we used to several years ago?
I think probably starting in 1997, that the concept of the behaviors of professionalism and how we teach it became apparent. It started to come into the competencies of residency in the early 2000s. And I think it's something that has been implicit, but the need to think about how we teach it explicitly, especially with all the changes in curriculum, changes in society, changes in generations. I think it's something that we have seen a need to make an explicit curriculum rather than something that we just expect of people at the end of the day. So I do think we talk about it more, but I think it's kind of like autism is, it's not increasing in incidence, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that we have a better understanding of it so we can diagnose it better. And also same thing with professionalism. I think we can better define it over time. So I think we are talking about it because of its importance and the what people call soft skills in how we bring the art of medicine to patients. It has become so much more important. The other side is there's a lot of evidence out there that shows that those who have had signals of professionalism, as you look at their careers, there is more lawsuits and corrective behavior in the long term. So how do we start this early? How do we teach behaviors? Because
explicitly.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of times, you know, people say either you have it or you don't, but it's truly, I think, a set of behaviors that we can teach, we can help people to think about. And some people have, you know, a head start based on their life experiences, but I think that we can bring this explicit part of what we think a physician should be to society really at every part of our curriculum, as opposed to teaching biochemistry in isolation. Thinking about biochemistry, thinking about rare diseases, and thinking about, like, you know, how hard that is for the patient and families, and then bringing that back to what our learning is, I think is really helpful to integrate that rather than keep it as a separate part of our curriculum.
I definitely think professionalism was part of, or is part of, the hidden curriculum. That's what I'm thinking of as you're talking. And so often, if, you know, you would say to a student, you know, well, that's not professional behavior, and the response is, I was like, well, what is not, you know, you really do have to break it down so that it's observable and you can describe it. And that is the only way to teach somebody any skill, right? And this is a skill of displaying professionalism. It's not just the thinking and the knowing, it's the enacting.
Yeah. And I think you hit it right on the head. A lot of times professionalism is used as a buzzword, and it's almost got a negative connotation to it now. Because, you know, whenever we say that's not professional, we're not actually telling them exactly what was not professional.
Right.
Right. So breaking some of those specificities down, you know, not showing up on time, right? It's to say you're late, so I'm professional, versus saying, you know, why is it important to show up on time?
Yes.
And I think, you know, bringing the whys into our feedback is so important in helping people to create those linkages.
100%. Yeah, so. It's not always, and we think, oh, that's so obvious. It's not always so obvious. How do we and other medical schools communicate to students all of those complexities and all of those behavioral explanations of what professionalism is? What do we do to take that out of the hidden curriculum and make it part of the formal curriculum?
I mean, I think first, I mean, it almost seems very basic, but I think as schools come up with their own mission and values and their own codes of conduct of what we expect of our students, we're starting to lay the foundation. But I think having a set of code of conduct lists is not as helpful as to really be able to talk about the whys once again. And for example, you know, all medical schools have orientations where, you know, this is really done explicitly. And it's not to set the rules, but really to start that discussion process of what we expect of not only our students, but what we expect them to grow into as professionals. Mm-hmm. And I think that's number one. And number two, I think there is a lot more explicit curriculum. And, you know, we have our clinical arts and sciences, and, you know, there is more explicit curriculum that is going into how do we interface with society, how do we interface with patients, even thinking about showing up to a standardized patient and how you're dressed. Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, we're not trying to be the fashion police. However, I think the rule that we often tell our students is, you know, how you dress, you know, you first think about, like, am I showing respect?
That's right.
To the patient. And are they going to also, you know, respect me, right? And, you know, take me as a professional. And I think that's just really kind of the start of that thought process of how do we interact as a professional within in medicine. I mean, I think the other thing is I've gone away from saying co-students when I talk to other students, and we've really gone to saying colleagues. because they're really
they are
in a job,
yeah,
a job to become a physician. And the more we think of them as students, it takes them away from that professional identity at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So being able to instill that consistently, and I think that, you know, as you get into the clinical years, I think there's a lot of role modeling, there's a lot of feedback, there's a lot of role modeling, good and bad, that people are able to see. But I think it's definitely much more operationalized now in the way we evaluate them, whether it's OSCEs, multi-source, feedback, self-reflection. I think there's so much more self-reflection in medical school now than there's been in the past, like even 10 years. And I think that is a part of how we're helping students to develop by being able to reflect on their own experiences and how they reacted at the end of the day. I mean, just to one thing that I think is really important is, I think professionalism is complex because it's situational. And, you know, you can find someone who's very nice, and people are like, oh, they're so nice, but what happened? And I think that the context and pressures and, you know, when people are stressed and they are tired, that's what I call the 5% to the students is, you know, when the 5% comes out.
Yes.
You know, but a lot of people don't know what the 5% is. And part of medical school and residency is learning that 5% and learning how to deal with it.
So what is the 5%?
The 5% is the demon inside that comes out. So it could, you know, some people it could be, you know, not answering pages or, right, not answering emails. Other people it could be, you know, being short or curt.
Yes.
I think that acknowledging that we have these weaknesses or, right, times of
It's humanity.
Humanity of, you know, we're people. But knowing that and knowing when to acknowledge that, knowing when to stop so that you don't take that, you know, that reactive step that we all know that we do when we're fatigued or, you know, hungry or whatever it is, right? So I think that's why it's so important to be able to evaluate students at so many different perspectives. Because if we only see them in their most optimized state, then, you know, we're not able to give them the feedback about when they're not optimized. And oftentimes students will say, well, you know, I just, you know, I was having a bad day. And I said, yes. And, you know, this is what happens on bad days.
Yeah.
How do we learn how to deal with those bad days? You know, because, you know, we don't get to choose when we see our patients at the end of the day. So
for the last 10 to 15 years or so, quantifying professionalism has been a requirement of medical schools. So we've talked about the fact that we're now defining professionalism as these behaviors, which really is the only way we would be able to assess it and give feedback. So now that we're doing this, how do we as a profession quantify professionalism in a meaningful way about each of our students?
I think that's the holy grail of medical education right now. It's so hard to quantify. And I think the overall culture of medical education with the LCME rules and you know, student satisfaction, I think there is some level of balancing that you have to do. It's hard because quantifying it also means giving a lot of feedback. And I think that that is something that people have trouble with across medicine, across all industries. And I think that being able to do it regularly and often, it would be the best way we can best evaluate our students. And that would be, you know, even every patient interaction, if we were to be able to get some patient
feedback.
Patient feedback, I mean, that would be so helpful.
Yeah.
Because I think that students would take that feedback in a manner that was, right, important. And it's not just someone's opinion, but it was their interaction.
It was my patients.
I'm kind of going around in a circle because it's so hard to be able to accurately evaluate in a reliable way. So,
and we do it. Mm-hmm. We do assess students' professionalism in a quantitative way on assessment forms. Mm-hmm. But we also acknowledge that it's really challenging to do it accurately. And getting to that feedback part and the importance of that, the irony around what would be most helpful is more and more feedback. The irony is the thing that we give the least feedback on is professionalism, because it's the most uncomfortable type of feedback to give, because it can feel very personal. Mm-hmm. And we know that being on the other end of that is difficult. I think acknowledging that is really helpful if you're giving somebody feedback. Mm-hmm. As well, and also saying, acknowledging that we've all been there at some point, right? I know it's really tough to know everything that's expected of you at this stage. So here are some of my goals for you, that, right? And then you can list some positive, the positive behaviors, right? And how do you get there? So there's a lot of ways to do that in a way that feels more comfortable for both the feedback giver and receiver, but that's what we do the least of.
Yes. And even though it's measured, you know, most people are getting high marks in professionalism, because it's very hard to say, you know, are you a 1, 2, 3, or 5, right?
It's very hard, especially if there's one measure. You're not actually measuring behaviors at that point. You're measuring the whole construct.
Yes. And I think we do it best probably in our standardized patient OSCEs. Mm-hmm. And that's where probably the best measurements are coming from in the feedback to the students. I do think the one area that's really hard for medical students and all professionals like who are type A is that, you know, the whole idea of perfectionism and wanting to be, right, like flawless. And I think from day one, we really try to encourage people to get into the growth mindset. Where, you know, excellence is actually the key. And I think that, you know, when we talk about professionalism, excellence are one of those pillars where it's not about being perfect, but, you know, what do you bring every day to continue to improve? And in order to improve, you have to be open to feedback. You have to be open to knowing what works and what doesn't work, and really being able to encourage students to reflect on that is so important because, you know, even right now while they're studying for step one, they're like, I should be at this number by now. And I was like, but you jumped by 7%. This is great. But they don't see the 7%. They see that they haven't hit these artificial goals that they've created for themselves, you know, without understanding what the full process is. And I think that's the hard thing about medicine and professionalism is that, you know, there are students, you know, they don't know what it means to really have, you know, that responsibility of taking patients yet.
That's right.
So there is a gap, and being able to close that gap for the students, you know, through the curriculum is really important. But how do we find proxy measures of that, that we can evaluate so that we can be able to give students the feedback that they need to continue to improve, not just on medical knowledge or how to, you know, get the, you know, history from patients, but rather, you know, like it's how you do it.
Yeah. That's how do you behave with your patient? Yes. Yeah. You reminded me of a story that one of my mentors and role models, who was a surgeon, told me, and I think I'll not say his name, just in case. I don't know if he would want me to. Probably would. I think he'd probably be fine with it. But such a role model, and he was probably the most gracious, professional individual that I have worked with, and couldn't imagine him even like you see, like getting your feathers ruffled kind of person, and taught other people so much about how to behave professionally. And he told me this great story of when he was young and he was, I think, a chief resident. And he said, I was so cocky. And I had an attending of mine pull me aside and say, you're really cocky. He goes, and you're good. You're really bright. You're our best resident. And I get that you feel like you have all the answers and you can behave however you want, but you can't. And he started listing out these behaviors and say, you can't do X, Y, Z. You can't do these things. You can't yell when you're angry was one of them, right? And he said that was the most life-changing event in his professional career. And he had experienced quite a lot. And he said it changed him forever. And he was the only person who said that. But I think we also underestimate the power of our feedback or the impact of our feedback. We think, it won't make a difference. I think depending on how it's done, right? I think doing it as somebody's ally, I think it can be profound.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, feedback and professionalism is like so intertwined.
Yeah.
And I think that I always tell all my trainees or even faculty, feedback is an act of care.
It is.
And if you truly care about this person, then you're going to want to
give the
hard feedback because you want them to flourish, be sustainable. And if there are behaviors that will be counter to them flourishing, then it's our responsibility to be able to speak up and give them that feedback. So
we've already thrown another term out there in our conversation that's pretty large in scope. So let's talk about professional identity formation. I'll give us a working definition. So professional identity formation is the process that medical students experience as they transform from a layperson to a physician and learn to interpret what it means to be a good doctor and demonstrate those ideals. How do you see professionalism and professional identity formation, which are different constructs, how do you see them intersecting with each other?
I mean, although they're different constructs, I feel that the whole concept of professional identity formation is really the vehicle in how we are able to think about professionalism. And both ways, both for the student to think about how do they grow into the profession, and for educators to think about where are they in their development, and how can we continue to move them along that spectrum. And I think it really helps us to really approach each student developmentally, where we're not saying all students must hit X, Y, Z versus everyone who comes in with different life circumstances.
Mm-hmm. At a different time
different
point.
Different experiences and also their own personal identity. And how do you think about that person and move them along through into becoming a physician? I think that's really a growth mindset version of thinking about how do we teach professionalism? How do we create a culture that provides not just the implicit curriculum, but being very explicit and deliberate about how we expect our students to be in a loving way, right? So it's really much more about their development and how we progress them rather than it's yes or no, you have it and you don't have it. I think it's both for us as educators and for our students to be able to kind of embody at the end of the day.
Yeah. What have you found are some of the biggest challenges for students in the development of their professional identities? Really getting to that stage where we're sort of fully integrated individuals as me as a human and me as a physician, and they've now meshed, right? That's the ultimate of professional identity formation. That's the end goal. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges to getting there?
I mean, when we start with the whole version of, you start with the individual identity, then you have that relational part, and then you have the societal, where that, the socialization into the culture of medicine. I think that in this current information age, where there's so much out there, Reddit, Student Doctor Network, there's so much trust in information that's not vetted, it's really hard to be able to. It's no different than, you know, how it's changed with us as physicians. There's so much information for patients to log in with, and that how do you do a lot of myth busting while not invalidating, you know, what people are coming in with and what they've read and what they've seen versus having those conversations with them.
Can you think of an example?
Oh, I mean, easy example is, you know, we do a lot of teaching around how to approach step one during their study period right now. But, you know, of course they go on Reddit and look at all the advice. And once again, this is individuals giving advice on how they studied.
Yeah.
And then it gets generalized to all students who study like this, which oftentimes can be in contrast to what we may have provided that individual. Being able to work through that while not saying, so I mean, most of the times I always say, you must have gone on Reddit. And it just to break the ice. And oftentimes it's helpful, rather because it's not about their kind of approach, but it's rather, oh, you know, let's talk about Reddit. Let's talk about, you know, what the information is and is it, you know, pertinent to you as a learner? So being able to circle back to how we're trying to develop them as individuals helps us to create that shared mental model for each other, between a student and a faculty or a mentor, to be able to progress them to, okay, well, what are the next steps? Because, you know, refuting what a student says versus kind of understanding where they're getting their information from, it's very different. And I think that's really helpful. So all along the spectrum from, you know, residency applications to interviews, I think there's so much good information out there, and there's also a lot of bad information out there. And oftentimes they want to trust what's in the social media circles. So that's something that we definitely have a challenge right now to go through. But part of my process is to actually read all the social media, because it helps me to understand where they're getting their information from, and it helps me to also debunk some of the myths that come out. So,
and it's no different than when we were in school and you knew one third year student. Mm-hmm. And so that one third year student told you about their experience in third year.
Yes.
And now you think that's the experience. I mean, it's no different. The only difference is that it's more accessible to everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's always been around, but the information age just has changed.
Yeah.
How fast that information gets to the student and how much influence it has. That's not individualized. And that's the hard part, is, you know, every student that comes here has different needs. And our job is to kind of individualize some of their needs and their learning. But how do we do that in a way that's meaningful? So so that's been really the big hurdle right now. The other thing around social media is, you know, work-life balance, I think, is a big thing in social media circles amongst residents and faculty and physicians. And I think that as a profession, I think wellness is an important part of how do we stay sustainable so that we can take care of patients? How do we have good boundaries, right? So these are all important, but it's still within the context of patients. So I think that a lot of what's in social media is really me-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, and I think there's valid points to it. But then being able to balance it back with, you know, what we do as a profession, I think is different.
I think that's really interesting. And I hadn't actually thought about the role of social media in professional identity formation and professionalism formation. I also was thinking about the work-life balance piece that you mentioned, that can be challenging for for faculty to give feedback on, because that's something I think that is individually held beliefs around, right? What is appropriate work-life balance? When should you be here and when should you be taking care of yourself? And some of it's generational for sure. So I think part of the challenge around that professional identity formation piece is if you're the learner going through that transformative process of taking in information and enough information that you can begin to recognize sort of what feedback, whether that feedback's from social media or whether it's from a real life human being and a faculty member, when to take it in and when to assimilate that feedback and when to decide that that feedback actually isn't appropriate for you. That's all part of the professional identity formation process, and it's not easy.
Yes. And I think that rather than fighting against it, I think really being able to embrace what social media is bringing and bringing conversations that to the table about, you know, I think COVID, I think, you know, this work from home culture, I think mistrust of systems, and right, I think all these things are being intertwined on social media, even in medical education. And I think that there is some level of mistrust with, you know, kind of leadership structures and how medical schools were built and the history of it. So I think acknowledging that, while also acknowledging that, you know, as a profession, you know, there that altruistic portion of professionalism is, you know, we do make sacrifices. We do put patients first. And I think that that is a part of what the profession is. And I think being able to instill that in a healthy way, not to the point where people are not taking care of themselves.
Right, and burning out.
But rather, how do we center the patient so that we do rest? How do we center the patient so that we do create good boundaries, that we do plan ahead, that we, you know, enjoy life. I think because the better you enjoy life, the better physician you'll
be. You can give,
And the more you can give. And I think that being able to fill that cup, right, is equally important. But it's for me personally, it's still within the context of how do we best care for not our individual patients, but, you know, in this dean role, it's how do we create this, you know, students who, you know, truly believe in like taking care of themselves so that they can care of others. I think, and, you know, I think Michelle Obama said it the best. She said that, you know, every day is practice and you're practicing a habit. So if you're late every day, you're practicing the habit of being late every day. So, you know, how do we help students to practice these good habits of taking care of themselves to take care of others? And that's a daily habit. So that starts even from the classroom, right? How do you make time for yourself while
getting to class on time?
Getting to class on time and doing the work and creating systems and habits of practice that allow you to be successful. And I think that is really the biggest way we can motivate our students and bring meaning to working hard, especially when they're not seeing patients yet. I think that's the hardest part. Is the separation for our students is not, you know, being there with the patients all the time, but, you know, also helping them to know that this body of knowledge that you're building, you need in order to really be a great doctor, right? In order to be humanistic, the more you know, the more you're open to, your more cognitive capacity you have to be able to listen to patients because your brain's not swimming, because you're not sure what's going on. So I think helping people to understand that this knowledge base is a part of, you know, building yourself as a physician, not for knowledge, so that you can really do the communication piece, so that you can be aware of others and you can be present in your patient interaction.
What I always like to come to at the end of this podcast is really getting practical and thinking about what faculty can do themselves, how they can have an impact. And I think we've talked about this, but I'm going to bring it back sort of explicitly again, since we've been talking about being explicit. What do you see as the role of the faculty member? How can we best help students on this journey? And I would ask for, you know, maybe a specific example even.
I mean, I think we have the luxury of our med-sci faculty having great relationships with our students, and we have a really dedicated core of our clinical faculty. I would, number one, say like the New York Subways, you know, if you see something, say something. And I think that a lot of times when, you know, we say we're student-centered, it's about supporting students. But student-centeredness really means like what is best for our students, and really putting that at the center of what's best for our students who are going to be in the practice taking care of patients. And I think that mind frame, once again, no different than a student, is all of our faculty. You know, we are helping our students to develop either good habits or maintaining, you know, bad habits. So.
And I would, and I really like that. And except the difference between if you see something, say something, is that the first time you say something, you're not telling someone else, you're telling them, yes. Right? So say something to the student. And the most common situation, right, is that every student is going to do small things here and there, right, that could use a little bit of corrective feedback. And, you know, we did too. It's mm-hmm. It's part of our journey. If there is a student who's particularly struggling in terms of their professional development, then after you've given them feedback, ideally more than once, right, and you've had that conversation, and then maybe it's time to for the faculty member to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when I say something, it's not necessarily giving them the feedback right away. I think saying something can be just being curious. Hey, I've noticed you've been late more often than not, mm-hmm. right? You know, tell me, you know, if everything's okay. And I think even being able to tell a student that you've noticed a change opens up the conversation to feedback. So, you know, people don't have to feel like they have to tell someone something.
Yep.
But just being curious about why there might be behavior change, or why that there was a set of behaviors that was not consistent with that person.
Yeah.
And I think that helps faculty, anyone, to be able to not feel like they're browbeating someone, but rather caring for someone at the end of the day.
That's the ask, tell, ask model mm-hmm. That we teach around
yes.
feedback as well.
So I think, you know, that crux of thinking about how do we stay curious in our science, how do we stay curious with our students, right? I think being able to not make value judgments, because, you know, there's so many things that occur that, you know, people who struggle, it's not always academic. And most of the time it's not academic. There's so many other factors that are involved. When people say that there's a professionalism issue, you know, 90% of the time,
yeah.
it's just something that's happening
right.
in the background, and
yep.
being able to help students to know that they don't have to be afraid.
Yeah, they're struggling with something. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's really the best way we can address professionalism and professional identity formation, so that they're not afraid to open up and be vulnerable. And I think that's what our faculty can really help our students do at the end.
Steve, thank you for a fantastic discussion. It was really great to explore this very complex topic with you. Thank you for taking the time to talk and lending us your expertise.
Thank you.
I'm Lisa Coplett. Thanks for listening. I'd like to thank the people who contributed to this show: Katie Lyons, our producer; Grace McGuire, our assistant producer; David DeRoche, our program director. For more information on other faculty development opportunities at Netter, email katie.lyons@qu.edu. For more information on all of Quinnipiac's podcasts, visit qu.edu/podcast. Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @QU Podcasts.